In the first two quarters, we transitioned almost all of our products over to Intel, except for one, and that is the Power Mac. Well, today, the Power Mac is going to fade into history. And here to tell us what's going to take its place is Phil Schiller. Phil?
Hey, Steve.
The best 30 plus minute Apple conversation you're gonna hear all week long. I'm your host, Airfun Elijah. Joining me today, he's like a graceful bird on the ski slopes. He's our very own Eddie the Eagle. Leander Caney is here.
Eddie the Eagle. That's totally right.
Also with us, he looks like he's the fourth member of ZZ Top. Buster Keane is here.
Hey. How's
I gotta give credit to Buster for that, Leander. I didn't even know who Eddie the Eagle was, but when we were talking about imagining you on skis, that was the reference he brought up.
That's funny, yeah. There was no skiing in England, so he used to practice on his stairs in his home. He used to ski down the stairs.
Well, see, now, I got tweeted by several people that said, oh, there's plenty of skiing in Scotland and in England and in Ireland, like that whole area, because we were talking about this last show, and I was like, I can't imagine people from that area being good skiers, because I didn't know if there were any ski slopes or any high, you know, altitude mountains out there.
There's none. There's no skiing. There's only, they ski on plastic slopes.
See, what the heck? Why were people, people were biting my hind end on Twitter telling me that there were some places that we didn't know about?
Well, I mean, you know, not when I was there, you know, there was nothing, not even in Scotland. There's no skiing at all, as far as I know.
So he would practice on his stairs.
Yeah,
is that how you built your skiing skills?
Well, no, I can't ski at all. I'm terrible. In fact, it was miserable. You know, I got so peed off with it.
Did you actually try to ski when you were there?
Yeah, I tried, and I can sort of, you know, I can get off the lift, and I can kind of go in a straight line. I can kind of steer, I can kind of turn a bit, but I can't really stop, which is a bit of a problem.
This is critical.
Yeah, it's also a critical skill, yeah.
And I've also got no control whatsoever. So, you know, like on the second day, I thought I was getting pretty, I'm getting pretty good. You know, I kind of felt like I got a feel for it. And then I hit a piece of ice, and I was like, you know, like Eddie the Eagle. I was like all arms akimbo, and I went flying, and the skis went flying down the hill. And in fact, I kept on, you know, in the end, I just ended up taking them off and walking down because it was so miserable.
No.
It's better than ending up one of those big giant snowballs with two skis sticking out of the end.
That's exactly right.
Well, who in your family knows how to ski? Does anybody?
Well, the kids are much better than me. And although they don't really, they haven't had any, you know, lessons or training either, you know, but they just, you know, it's like with a kid, you know,
they just pick that stuff up fast.
Yeah. And they got nothing to lose really. And they go flying, they can crash into a tree and they'll be fine. You know, whereas I'd be really in trouble.
Yeah. Kids are impervious to trees. They can just run right into them. They just get back up, dust themselves off, put their teeth back in. And
yeah. Well, they're just much better at it too. You know, like my daughter's, you know, she's okay. She's pretty good.
Well, welcome back. I'm glad you made it back in one piece. The idea of you on skis really makes me laugh. I don't know why.
Well, I wanted to take a lesson, but a certain member of the family who is keeping an eye on the budget discouraged it.
And it's expensive. It's like 50, 60 bucks to take one of those lessons. Crazy.
Oh, my God. After all the money we spent, you know, hiring all the stuff and getting up there in the hotel and everything,
totally,
you know, it gets a drop
totally
in the bucket. I'm going to do it again, but I'm going to take a lesson for sure.
This is why I never got into skiing, because there's so many. The accoutrement is so expensive. You have to, like, get the passes and get the skis, and you have to have a car that can make it up the snow. And there's, like, one thing after another. You have to have, like, all the clothes. And
right.
It's, yeah, it's
in
like
fact, that was the other thing.
Hobby.
The clothes didn't fit. I'm too fat now for the ones I have. So I couldn't even do the zippers up on them, and then the suspenders kept on falling down. I was so
peed off. You were
wearing
suspenders? Oh man!
Well, they had these pants have them on them. It was miserable.
Do you have any pictures that we can include in the show notes?
No, I don't.
Oh, alrighty, well, as everyone can imagine, we have got one of the most bizarre and exciting stories to talk about this week. I think what happened this week with Apple bringing all these journalists in to talk well, all these five journalists in to talk about the future of the Mac was without precedent and completely bizarre. And there's so much stuff in here that we're going to unpack. This was just an incredible event. So we'll be deconstructing that. If you stay tuned till the end, we're going to be doing an all new under review where we talk about the stuff that we're currently testing out. And Leander is going to reveal a gadget that I was unable to talk about in a previous show, but tried to talk about, but was under a non-disclosure agreement to talk about and almost spilled the beans. And now that it's out, we can actually talk about it. So stay tuned for that. Before we jump into this week's news, let me go ahead and say thank you to Squarespace for supporting this episode. Squarespace.com, of course, where you can go to get up and running with a website, a responsive website, quickly, and you will have a beautiful website. And if you are making your next move in 2017, maybe you have decided to start a business, maybe you have decided to start writing more online, maybe you want to post your artwork or your photography, Squarespace can have you up and running with a website in no time at all, and you don't need to know how to code. Everything is drag and drop. And even though it's very simple to use and very simple to build a website, it is incredibly powerful as well. You can customize everything, make the website look uniquely yours, and it's extremely easy to add videos, extremely easy to add your social media, and has one of the best mechanisms for building an image gallery that I have used. It's super duper simple to get an image gallery up and to edit everything and to run everything by yourself. You won't need a developer to help you, so you'll actually keep your website up to date. Check it out at squarespace.com. You can get signed up for a 2-week free trial. You can build a website, use all of Squarespace's functionality, and decide for yourself. And if you like what you see, you can continue your service after the trial with code CULTCAST at checkout. You'll save 10% off your first order. That's code CULTCAST at checkout. And if you order a year of service, you get a free domain name at squarespace.com. Oh, man. Leander, so I said it earlier, this story this week is without precedent. Have you ever seen anything like this happen before? This was totally bizarre.
Yeah, no, not I can think of at all. Not even back in the old days, you know, even before Jobs came back. And I was, you know, because I was working for Mac Week back in the mid-90s. So I can't think of anything. No, never.
I feel like if Steve Jobs were still with us, this may not have been able to happen. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, definitely. He you know, they did sneak peeks, but it was always like, you know, before the head of a... the only time they talked to the press is when they got a product coming out, ever.
Yeah.
Ever, you know, and they did the sneak peeks behind the scenes. Someone would get a couple of days to, you know, get the background story, but it was always timed for when, you know, he'd go on stage and do an announcement. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So they only talk about products when they got something for sale. And yeah, I don't think they've ever done this before.
So for those of you that weren't following this story this week, what happened was Apple invited a group of tech journalists. There were five people to their product realization lab for a quiet meetup. It's the room where Apple constructs their Mac prototypes and designs them and tests them, you know, to see if their designs work, to see if they're usable. And in the room, Phil Schiller, Vice President of Worldwide Marketing, Air Force One, a.k.a. Craig Federighi, Vice President of Software Engineering, and John Ternus, who's the Vice President of Hardware Engineering. And basically, it was the Apple executives admitting that the Mac Pro, with its futuristic, fanciful design, was a big mistake. Is that too dramatic? Is that accurate?
I don't know. Big and floppy. Yeah, I guess so. Kind of. Yeah, they said it was not. They didn't say it was a mistake, but that's basically what they said.
I feel like they said everything they could have said, aside from that. this was a huge mistake.
Yeah,
I made a huge mistake, as Joe would say.
Yeah.
Yeah, and. Not that the Mac Pro isn't a great computer, but one of the things I found interesting is Phil Schiller talked about the variations of that word pro and how many different types of work fit into that one category, and how the Mac Pro really only fit the needs of a sliver of people within the pro category and pretty much left everyone else with a computer that didn't really work for them, which is why a lot of people were starting to use the iMacs for their professional work. And it seems like a big part of this was the innovation of the design, this new trash can design. They actually ended up designing their way into a corner where they couldn't update it regularly.
Yeah, but it was maddeningly, obtuse, I think, the way that they explained it. Like, I read a couple of the different accounts and, given that I assume that the quotes are accurate, and the paraphrasing is accurate. But, when they asked them, they weren't really specific about what exactly it was. They were sort of maddeningly inspecific, in that typical Apple way. They said that they were trying to design, that they didn't design the trash can, they didn't design the shape, they designed what they thought was this innovative dual GPU architecture. So they stuck two GPUs in there, and then that led them to this triangular configuration for the sort of CPU and the two GPU cards in this sort of thermal cooling triangle arrangement. When they put it in a trash can, it would cool this central core. But then they found that they couldn't update it. The people actually, what they wanted was GPUs are advancing so fast that people wanted to be able to update the GPUs, but that design couldn't do that. And it's like, well, duh. duh. I mean, this is kind of obvious. And they weren't, I don't find it really, I think they were trying to say that they made this bet on this dual GPU architecture and that people could expand the machine externally. That you would never really need, to expand internally, which is also really weird. They didn't explain that thinking. Anyway, I found that the accounts left a lot of questions unanswered. Like, they've been here before with the Cube. The Cube was exactly the same. It was supposed to be a pro level machine that you couldn't really easily upgrade, and it bombed. It bombed really badly. And I'm surprised they made the same knucklehead mistake twice. The best Mac Pro, I think, the best design was that, the old sort of G5.
The tower. Yeah absolutely.
Right. With that door you could take off and then all those slots. And I don't know why they felt they had to reinvent the wheel and go to something that wasn't upgradable. That's definitely a consumer thing. This is definitely an Apple's philosophy, isn't it? I mean, your iPad is completely, and your iPhone, you can't upgrade the thing. They took out, you can't change the battery, you can't stick in an extra memory card. It's sealed shut. It's pure Steve Jobs. You don't want people messing with the guts. But the Pro machines are completely opposite. And it was the one Apple product that was upgradable, that you could get get inside and tinker around with. I don't know what they didn't explain why that philosophy changed, which I thought was kind of a little bit maddening.
There's definitely a parallel with the Cube. I hadn't considered that. And there's another parallel with one of the greatest movies of all time, Jurassic Park. And that is, they were so interested in whether or not they could build this Mac Pro, they never stopped to ask whether or not they should. And they ended up building this computer that was very forward-thinking, it was very innovative, but it wasn't practical for the needs of actual pros. And so when they released this computer, it was something that the pros maybe could use when it was first released, but Craig Federighi was saying we kind of boxed ourselves in to this circular shape. We weren't easily able to update the components because the industry is moved in a totally different direction. So the Mac Pro was built around this dual GPU architecture, and Apple even had an API that they were hoping that developers would use to take advantage of these dual GPUs. So there's kind of like two, like, I wouldn't say they're underpowered, but they're not like the mega GPUs that you find in most modern PCs today. And so while Apple was going that route, the rest of the industry was just going with these really mega powerful single GPU cards. And so Apple, having this proprietary technology, it wasn't able to innovate, or it wasn't able to update with these components that were coming to the market regularly. And for whatever reason, they never updated this computer at all until, just in the last few days. Meanwhile, the PC industry is releasing new CPUs at a much faster rate, new GPUs at a much faster rate. And the GPUs that are coming out are amazing. I mean, there are some, like the NVIDIA GPUs that have come out are incredible, especially for the price points. And Apple is unable to take advantage of those because that Mac Pro is not built to support a single GPU. It needs to have two. So it ended up languishing. And let me just read you some of these quotes straight from the horse's mouth, so to speak. This is John Ternus, VP of Hardware Engineering. He says, the way the system is architected, it didn't lend itself to significant reconfiguration for someone who wanted a different combination of GPUs. That's when we realized we had to take a step back and completely re-architect what we're doing and build something that enables us to do these quick, regular updates and to keep it current and keep it state of the art. Hallelujah! This is where Jacob's Ladder comes down and the whole choir starts singing and clapping. And it's like, oh my gosh, they get it. So they built this computer they thought was the way the industry was going, and the industry went a different way. And this is Apple admitting, we screwed up. We screwed up, and we're sorry about that, and we're going to do better in the future. And I actually came away after reading this whole thing feeling pretty hopeful about it, because it seems like Apple gets it now. Like, they need to really pay attention to what pros want and give pros something that will be updated regularly, hopefully on a yearly basis at the very least.
Well, right, but that you know, this is they began the conversation, right, Buster? You know, they were saying that if you took the Mac division a lot, that first of all, they said, you know, there's nothing wrong with the Mac. We're not neglecting the Mac. We know that's only a small part of our business, but, you know, trust us, we're paying attention. And if you took the Mac business, it would be, you know, almost a Fortune 100 company on its own. And that sales are up this year, you know, as they have been the last, you know, whatever it is, you know, number of quarters. But, you know, I think clearly, why did it take them so long? Everyone knew that this was a problem a while ago.
And I feel like it's just the people on the internet were so loud, I feel like, about how Apple was neglecting pro users. And Apple was saying in their speech, you know, not everybody needs a Mac Pro. Like, I don't even need a Mac Pro, and I'm a pretty serious Mac user. So, I mean, it is such a tiny slice of their market that I feel like they really didn't care, and they didn't realize that by not caring about it, it was also just deteriorating the entire Mac brand, I feel like.
Right.
I've seen a few, like, vloggers on YouTube switch to PCs just because they're tired of using MacBooks. Like,
right. Yeah, definitely. And I think that's a really good point. There was definitely a big, big PR problem, which is exactly why they called this, to try to put damp that fire down. But they were getting a lot of heat, weren't they? And people, you know, look at the people they invited, like John Gruber from Daring Fireball. You know, like, he was definitely one of the ones that was fanning those flames of, like, you know, Apple doesn't care about pro users anymore. And like you said, you know, Microsoft was getting a lot of praise, wasn't it, for the stuff that it's doing. Mm-hmm. And you could definitely sort of see that, you know. In fact, Luke was looking into it, was like trying to see how many like pro video editors have been switching back to Windows because they're so sick of the Mac Pro.
If I could have built a Hackintosh with a powerful GPU, I would have done that. I probably would have switched to a Hackintosh because I was frustrated as well. And it really did feel like that Apple had abandoned pro users and was focusing, and we've said this in the past on past shows, was focusing on the prosumer, was building products for people who, you know, use a DSLR and might edit a movie in iMovie every once in a while, and that was the power that they needed. But it wasn't like a seriously powerful machine. And I wanted them to be building like Ferraris, and instead they were building like Nissan GTRs. You know, it's like something that looks fast but isn't quite a super powerful machine. So I think they did need to do something. And John Gruber said something that I thought was really funny, and I think it was right. And he was like, Apple had to have this event if they were going to update the Mac Pro, because if they just would have done a spec bump like they did, people would have thought they were out of their minds, you know, like, because they updated the Mac Pro with, they basically just took all the higher end specs and moved them down the line and then discontinued the base model. So it's essentially the same machine. You just get, you know, faster hardware and better GPUs for lower prices. But if they would have done that and not said anything about this whole situation, people would have been like, okay, Apple's really done. Like, this is crazy. Like, they would have lost their minds if Apple did that. So they did need to bring this up and talk about the future of Pro Macs, even though I think it's very strange to update your Mac Pro and then say, hey, we have another one coming out in the near future, which is essentially what Phil Schiller went on to say. He said, we are in the process of what we call completely rethinking the Mac Pro. We have a team working hard on it right now, and we want to architect something so that we can keep it fresh with regular improvements, amen, and we're committed to making it our highest-end, high-throughput desktop system designed for demanding pro customers. As part of doing the Mac Pro, it is by definition a modular system, he said. We will be doing a pro display as well. So Apple said they were done with displays and then worked with LG to release that display that had all those those issues and had to be recalled. And now they're saying they are back into making their own displays. And they say, we think it's really important to create something great for our pro customers who want a pro modular system. And we will take longer than this year to do that. So I'm guessing that means 2018. They have something in the works for 2018.
Well, the reports this morning, you know, there's some report. It's kind of unconfirmed, but they're saying early 2019.
Wow.
Well, it makes sense because it sounds like Apple just decided to do this a couple weeks ago. You know.
Oh, was that your takeaway from it? Is that they just realized that they had made a mistake and then they were like, okay, what are we going to do to fix this?
Yeah, there's a couple reports. Like, there's another one today that came out that said, like, the constant negativity from pros over the last couple months is what finally decided them to say, hey, maybe we should make a better Mac Pro.
Yeah, Craig Federighi said they had all gone on their own spiritual journeys and landed in a place where they realized this is not the machine that people wanted.
Yeah, I'm just surprised it took them this long to recognize that it was so bad, you know? Like, I guess we just got to bitch a lot more, you know, about things, and then Apple will finally fix it. But it's like the Mac Pros just trickles down to all the other stuff because that's what the pros make their high-quality stuff on that. And so if they're not using the Mac Pro, then I think other people aren't going to want to use Macs as much either. So
I agree. I think the people who use, like the really high-end gear are the ones who influence everybody else. And so even though Apple said that the Mac Pro constituency is only like... They
like
said 1%
of Mac, like 2% of Mac users.
2%, yeah, that wouldn't surprise me if it were 2, because it's an expensive machine. It doesn't come with a monitor or anything like that. But those people who are making those really like high powered projects run are the people that other people look to say, oh man, what are you using? It influences everyone else in the Mac. In the Apple ecosystem, if somebody is using a higher end Mac to do really cool stuff. So Apple really does need to appease those people. And plus, I just want to see them be more practical. Like sometimes I feel like Apple is so esoteric in their design. They have this vision of what the computer should be, and they make a computer that isn't practical in everyday use. And the new MacBook Pro, I think, with the USB-C ports, I think is an example of that. Like, they could have not gone that direction, and instead they made it so futuristic that you end up having to buy all these dongles just to use the damn thing, and and it's frustrating for a lot of people, and it's one of the reasons why I still haven't upgraded, because I use my SD card port. I like MagSafe. I mean, there's things about the computer they got rid of that I don't like. And I think they had done that with their Pro machine as well. I would love to see them just do another tower, like a Mac Pro tower that you can take out the components, switch stuff out, just like, you know, like a regular PC where you can open up the case right. And like take stuff in and out. Like that would be awesome, especially if they supported actual high-end GPUs. That would be amazing.
It's too boring and vanilla, though, for Apple, right? And Johnny Ive, they want to be pushing stuff, you know.
I know. It needs to be hermetically sealed, and it needs to have, you know, some type of resin, you know, encoding all the different components so that they can never, you know, touch air. But it really is not practical, especially for pros who like to upgrade components as new components become available. And, I mean, that's what I've been doing on my media PC. Like, I kept the same motherboard. I kept the same RAM. I upgraded the GPU, and I upgraded the CPU, and it gave the computer new life. And I've been using this computer for, I don't know, 4 or 5 years now, and it's just... It's a monster. I mean, it's super powerful now that I upgraded a lot of the components. And I think that I consider myself a member of that pro class. Even though I'm not doing things that are necessarily pro, I like to have pro gear especially for, you know, showing it off to my friends right. and making myself feel good about myself. It's an ego. It's an ego thing. It's like, I don't even need to use it, but I like having it.
Yeah, well, my son built a Hackintosh, you know, recently runs rings around the Pro, I think, for a fraction of the price.
I would love to do that, and one of the reasons I was excited about this news is because if Apple really does end up supporting higher-end GPUs, that's going to trickle down to the Hackintosh community, and you'll be able to build a PC that is super powerful, that is a fraction of the price. Because, you know, hey, if you could just run a PC with Apple with Apple software on it, why not? If it runs the same and you're not going to be looking at the case, I don't need it to be hermetically sealed. I would be happy to just to build one myself. So is that his go-to machine, Leander?
Yeah.
And is he playing games on it or anything? Like, what is he doing with
it? Oh, yeah, of course he is, yeah.
Okay.
He's not doing it, yeah. He edits his video. He made a really nice video the other day, actually, that was really good.
Did he use Final Cut Pro?
Really impressed. No, just iMovie.
Oh, he used iMovie. Okay. See, that's the big problem is Final Cut Pro is not really compatible with the NVIDIA graphics cards. And AMD doesn't have anything that's really powerful.
Why don't you use Premiere?
I like Premiere, but Final Cut Pro is faster just because it does a lot of the encoding in the background. So it's just constantly encoding when you're not
constantly like
pushing
rendering,
it.
You mean?
Yeah, it's constantly rendering in the background. And I don't know all the technical reasons that it's faster, but it's a lot faster than Premiere. And so when you're ready to export something in Final Cut Pro, if you have a 10-minute video, it might be able to export the whole thing in, I don't know, 7 minutes, 6 minutes, whereas Premiere might take a half hour, maybe an hour, depending on your actual hardware. And plus, I like Apple software. I know how it works. I know how to edit movies really quickly in Final Cut Pro. And I'm sure Premiere is similar, but Premiere has this whole orthodoxy built into it, like the way you're supposed to edit. And I'm not familiar with that, so I am just not as fast in Premiere as I am on Final Cut Pro. And especially like if you come from iMovie, I mean, Final Cut Pro is basically iMovie Pro. It's the same software. It's just more powerful. So you kind of already know how to use it. It's just kind of built in. So we talked about the future of Mac Pros. We're going to be getting new Mac Pros sometime in the next, I guess, year, maybe year or two. We don't know. Apple didn't say, and they kept getting pushed to give us a date. And of course, they wouldn't do that. They also said that the iMacs are going to be getting updated as well, and we'll be getting spec bumps that will make them more attractive to Pro users, specifically configurations of iMac, specifically with Pro customers in mind, and acknowledging that our most popular desktop with Pros is an iMac. I want to see better, more Pro-oriented MacBook Pros as well. I'm not thrilled with the new MacBook Pro. I think it could be better. Yeah. Am I alone in that sentiment?
Totally
yes.
Better.
What'd you say, Buster?
I said it could be totally better.
Yeah, yeah. Buster yeah. and I are not none too enthused.
No fans. Well, they sold. This is the most. Isn't this the most popular MacBook ever?
Yes,
supposedly.
Sold. Which just makes you wonder, actually. You know, like the Mac. I wonder if surely the branding must have been on the wall for the Mac Pro before now. I mean, it does boggle the mind that that they were waiting on this consumer backlash, because what about the sales numbers? I mean, I guess the sales numbers, it was selling okay. It must have been. Otherwise, they would have gone, oh, wait a second, there's something wrong here. And also, you know, the fact that they did a spec bump while they said that this is essentially the end of the line.
Right. You know, it's strange, isn't it?
Yeah, because you'd think, oh, you know, a lot of buyers must be thinking, you know, I'm just going to hold out. You know, I'm not going to buy this one.
Well, I would imagine most people are going to have that exact sentiment. It's like, why would I buy the Mac Pro now if I know a new one's coming and they're going to totally re-architect it?
Right.
Yeah, but God, you got to wait so long too, you know?
Yeah.
Jeez,
and they basically said that. They said that there are people who actually do use the Mac Pro now, and those people will benefit from the updates. So, and they didn't really update the Mac Pro. I guess they're giving you more bang for your buck, because they, like I said, they basically just took the higher end models and moved them down in price.
It's like a price adjustment rather than a bump. Yeah,
exactly. Because the hardware going into it isn't new. It's just faster versions of what was available for the prices.
Right.
So it's still the exact same hardware. It doesn't have Thunderbolt 3. It doesn't have USB-C. I mean, it doesn't have any of the modern stuff that you would expect on a new Mac. And I know I'm beating a dead horse, and I've said this before, but if you are going to be releasing a machine that costs $3,000 to $5,000 to $7,000, that thing needs to be a Ferrari, and you need to be updating it regularly. It's preposterous to think that people are going to spend that much money on a machine and have the technology inside it be 3 or 4 years old. It's outrageous. I mean, it's embarrassing, really. Mm-hmm. It's an embarrassment for Apple, and people who and like PC people who make fun of Apple are right in making fun of Apple in this regard, because they're spending thousands of dollars less for these computers that are more powerful than the Mac Pro. And here you have people, you have Apple pushing this exceedingly expensive machine with this old tech. It's just, it's bizarro land. It's like, what are they doing over there? They really need to, they need to do better. They need to do better. And I think it's fair for us to expect them to do better. And it sounds like they've heard that message. And no doubt, Tim Cook, who listens to this show religiously, has heard us talk about and make these complaints before.
That's right.
And has been like, hey, y'all, you think you could update that MacBook Pro? Or the Mac Pro, y'all? And they're like, oh, Tim, come on, it's fine. And we kept the pressure on, and finally, they've heard the message.
Thank goodness. Thanks, Tim.
So you're welcome. You're welcome, everyone. We're fighting on your behalf.
Did the Stalker do anything actually on the back of this?
I don't think so.
If this was the iPhone, you know, it would whole hell would have broken loose.
Oh right, and Apple would have changed it a lot sooner, because that's a big moneymaker for them too.
Right.
And that's, I think, the big problem. You know, is Apple is always just so focused on iPhone that they forget a lot of the other stuff, or the stuff in, like the peripheral stuff is just kind of half-assed a lot of times, it seems now.
Yeah, but you know, if you have a good, you know, if you have a machine like this and it's well engineered, you know, just keeping up with regular updates with new chips, I don't, you know, easy for me to say, but it can't be that hard, right?
How hard could it be? Bring Woz back and let's make it happen.
Well, they were doing this for two decades.
Right.
You know, this is where they come from. I mean, they didn't fire everybody, or did they all retire?
Like,
you know,
you
and Mansfield's
the
not there. Right, but and you just
it reminds me of that story that we talked about a while back that said the Mac team is kind of without leadership right now and really doesn't have clearly defined goals.
Yeah,
and
I think that's
that
very true.
To do with it,
I think it's very true. I think there's definitely been a lack of focus, and I think it's because Mansfield has been moved on to the car project, right? They haven't got anyone to fill his shoes, and the executive focus is elsewhere, isn't it? Obviously, it's on the iPhone 8. I mean, they got a huge update to the iPhone coming out, which is 3 years worth of engineering, super intensive engineering on its own.
Though, it makes you wonder. It's like, can't Apple hire more engineers so that this is not? I mean, they have all the money in the world, right? They have all the resources they could ever possibly want.
Right.
And I wonder if the one thing that they're missing is just more engineering talent. Like, maybe they just are having a hard time getting talented people to be part of the Mac team.
Well, there was an interesting debate. Someone was, you know, like, I think it was Vox, you know, mentioned this, said this shows the weakness of Apple's corporate structure, because it's a functional organization, right? Like in every other company, a lot of other big companies, like GE, they have separate divisions that, you know, and if Apple was a divisional company, it's a functional company, which means it's organized by software, hardware, you know, retail, marketing, you know, these big functions. And there's not actually a separate division, you know, for the Mac, for the iPhone, for the iPad, or for its other big, you know, for its big product categories. Like GE would be organized like that. You know, GE has like a batteries division, it has an air conditioners division, it has a, you know, whatever else they do, you know, fridges division, and there'd be that division would be in charge of the profit and loss for that particular product or product category. Mm-hmm. And it was saying, you know, that, like, you know, and a lot of startups are organized functionally because there's just not enough people. You know, they'll have someone in marketing, they'll have someone in hardware, someone in software, and they work together on all these different projects. And you know, like, one of the weaknesses of the strength of something is they can be very quick and they can be very agile, and it's also there's no fighting, you know, like when the iPod, when the iPad or the iPhone starts to eat into Mac sales, there's no, you know, the Mac division doesn't start to shut it down. That was the problem with Microsoft, wasn't it, for many years, was that they, you know, divisions like the Office division and the Microsoft you know, the Windows division wouldn't let other divisions do things because it was going to hurt their business, right? So, you know, that, but Vox was arguing that this this shows the weaknesses of Apple's functional structure because they don't have someone lobbying for the Mac. They don't have a Mac division with the head of the Mac, you know, division who's fighting for updates, who's making sure that, you know, his division is functioning really, really well.
I hope that changes going forward. And that seemed to be something that Phil Schiller was trying to communicate, is he was saying, and actually he started off the entire meeting by saying, things are going really great with the Mac. we haven't forgot about the Mac. The Mac is important to us. You know, it was like the Mac pep talks. It was at the beginning of this meeting. And he talked about how, as you said, Leander, Mac on its own would be a Fortune 100 company, and so on and so forth. So maybe they had to snap out of it. I really don't know, but this is certainly a wake-up call for them that people are not happy, and you can't keep creating products that don't meet your customers' needs for long, because eventually they're going to start looking for other options, as they have. I mean, even I've considered in the last year moving to Windows, quite honestly.
What?
I mean, not as my main machine, but if I needed a more powerful Mac, which I feel like I do, where do I go? I mean, I'm so desperate for more power. I was thinking about building a Hackintosh, and I researched that and figured out that wouldn't work because modern GPUs aren't supported. So it's like, where do you go if you want something more powerful? Like the Mac Pro is, you know, 25 years old now, and I'm not spending $3,000 on that. I don't really want an iMac because I don't want a built-in screen. I have a monitor that I like. And so there's no upgrade path for me. And this happened when I was using Nikon gear, photography gear. I needed a new camera. Nikon kept not releasing something that was suitable for me. And so I ended up switching to Canon eventually because Canon had something that was more suited to my needs. And then eventually Nikon came out with something that would have worked for me. But anyway, you can only frustrate people for so long before they're like, screw this, I'm going to see what else is out there. And there are some nice, powerful PCs that are on the market today are real slick.
Yeah, but what are you saying? Listen to what you're saying, Irfan. Listen to yourself. Listen to yourself. It's horrible.
Yeah, I'm not.
Get yourself an iPad Pro. You'll be happy with that.
There you go. iPad Pro and the smart keyboard is all you need. Quit being so dramatic. Okay, let's move on. I think we have sufficiently flogged that to death. Let's go ahead and move on to Under Review, the segment where we talk about the stuff that we're reviewing. Leander, you've got something that I talked about where I nipped around the edges of many shows back when I was talking about how I had been invited to Sonos to view an upcoming product. And I almost spilled the beans, but I didn't.
What were you invited there for? He gave you something, didn't he?
Yeah. It was not even at all related to Sonos. One of our listeners invited me there to give me a router that he wasn't using. He's like, you should check this out, because it was a router that we had talked about in the show before. So, but in the process, I got to like tour the office and stuff, and it was really cool. Beautiful offices in Seattle. And I saw a product that was out, and we had a conversation about it, and then it turned out that it was top secret, and I couldn't talk about it. but now it's out. You have one. You've been using it, and you actually get to tell us about it. And you probably know a lot more than me because I just saw like a 25-second example of how it works. What is it, Leander? What do you got?
It's the Sonos Playbase.
Playbase,
yeah. And it complements the Play Bar, which is their home theater speaker.
Oh, is it not its own independent unit that you can just use by itself?
I'm sorry, it is? It is. When I say complement, it's they have two home theater speakers now. It's not like, I think people thought it was a replacement that they were getting rid of the Play Bar.
That's what I thought too.
But no, they're going to continue to sell the Play Bar as well as the Play Bass.
So what's the difference between the two, and what does the Playbase actually do?
Well, it's a home theater speaker, but it's also a streaming music speaker, mm-hmm. and it.
But
goes
it's like for your television, right? Like you sit it under your TV.
Yeah, you sit it under your TV. The TV sits on top of it. The Playbar, you know, you put in front of your TV. Well, in fact, the Playbar was designed to be mounted on the wall, and they thought, you know, when it came out, they assumed that a lot of people were putting their TVs, they're mounting them on the wall, the flat screen TVs. Mm-hmm. But it turns out in their research that 70% of people don't. You know, they just stick their TV on a piece of furniture, on a console. So when they went out and looked at it, people bought the Play Bar, and it was a really popular product, but, you know, they'd sort of stuck them in front of the TV. And you know what some of these funky stands they have with big flat screen TVs?
Yeah.
It's kind of difficult sometimes to get a sound bar in to sit comfortably in front of the TV.
Yeah, definitely.
So they thought, okay, well, you know, we should make it so that it goes underneath and the TV actually sits on top of it. So it's a big solid box, and it kind of looks like a pizza box with rounded corners, and it's pretty heavy. It weighs a good 30 pounds or so. Mm-hmm. And it's solid as heck, you know, like it's designed to take a TV that weighs up to like 75 pounds. And it has 10 speakers inside, including a subwoofer. And the woofer is actually mounted inside. You know, it's only two and a half inches. It's less than 2.5 inches high. So the woofer is mounted, like, it's sandwiched right in there. Mm-hmm. And it forces the air out sideways rather than, you know, outwards.
Mm-hmm.
And to do that, they built this curved channel for the air that's shaped like an S. And it points out on the side. And it sounds really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
It really sounds good. It really has a really rich and deep sound, much more deep than the I thought the Play Bar was an awesome speaker. I thought it was astonishing, in fact. But this is better. You know, I did some head-to-head tests with my kids. We were listening to all this different kind of music, and I was doing blind tests with them, you know, which one's better. And, like, every single time they showed the Play Bass over the Play Bar. And it's really simple to set up. Super, you know, like, it's... Sonos has really got it down now, like the whole Apple magic, you know, where the software and the hardware works together, and it's really easy to add systems. Like, the app immediately detected that there was a new component, added it straight away. It used to be a bit of a rigmarole to get it, to get it all sort of hooked up, but hooking it up, and then I also have some satellite speakers and a subwoofer as well that I hooked up with it. That was all dead easy. Then you do TruePlay, which is their tuning app. It tunes the whole system to the sound of the room.
Mm-hmm.
It listens to how echoes and you know, sound is bouncing off the different components, and it actually optimizes it for two spaces. Like, you sit down where you normally watch TV, and you tell it, okay, and you hold up, you use your iPhone. It uses the microphone on the iPhone to listen to how sound is coming in, and it tunes the speakers, first of all, for where you're sitting on the couch, and then you get up and you walk around the room, and it tunes the music. So when you listen to music, it sort of fills the whole room. When you're listening to TV, it sort of channels it towards the couch area.
Oh, interesting. So it changes the way the music is.
Yeah.
Is directed based upon the what you're listening to.
Yeah, exactly.
That's really cool.
And it says it can detect, you know, when you listen to music from the TV and when you listen to music from some streaming service. So not music, you know, sound from the TV. And so, yeah, it's, you know, it's. I've been a huge, huge Sonos fan forever. And like, over the years, built up quite a Sonos collection. Like, yeah. Anytime I got a big check, I'd go out and buy some Sonos speaker, you know, and have to sneak it into the house.
No longer. Now, look at you. They're just sending you the gear now.
I got to send this one back. I'm heartbroken.
Oh, you do? Oh.
Yeah.
Just fight into a tree like Buster did with his Mavic Pro.
I'm going to go dark.
Into a tree.
Right. I'm going to disappear off the planet, face the planet Earth. Yeah, so I can't get it back from me.
Yeah, because they're what are they, like $700?
Yeah, this is $699. Yeah, $700. So yeah, it's eye-wateringly expensive. You know, that, I think you can get a cheap soundbar for like $100 or less, right?
I don't know how much they cost, but my guess would be under $100. It's not
yeah,
sound
I think
good.
Vizio does a soundbar. You know, that's mm-hmm. that's kind of like that price, and you know, and the good ones cost about $350, I think.
I do like about the Playbase, and I think they're really onto something, is the placement for sure. Because I've thought about getting a soundbar before, but I'm like, where the hell do you put it?
Right.
Like, what am I going to do with this thing? I can't sit in front of my TV. I'm not going to mount it to the wall.
Yeah, it's a problem.
So, you know, it's like they're just so inconvenient to use.
Right. But if you've got a flat screen TV, though, you know, like, the sound probably sucks. Because, like, the thinner the TVs get, the worse sound gets.
And if they build the speaker into your TV, it's not a good speaker. It's just whatever they can give you to make it so that your TV has sound.
Yeah. Dang. And so a good soundbar really makes a big difference. And, of course, it's a great stereo as well. Like, it's an awesome living room stereo. So, you know, I don't have a, you know, we got rid of our stereo forever, but I always had a stereo, and my whole life, you know, had a stereo, record player, tape deck, you know, CD player, big speakers. Like, I've had some crazy speakers, you know, like I was friends with, I've always had an audiophile friend who would always get me, you know, some great set of speakers for cheap, you know, and I had some Polk Audio ones I spent a fortune on that I really loved. But the Sonos completely eclipsed all that, so... You know, I've had these Sonos things. And I was going to say about the expense of these things, you know, like I said, like every time I got a big check, like I got a check for my book, so I went out and bought the subwoofer, which is like $600 too. And that's also like a complete, you know, like I was literally sweating when I got that, you know. But it's lasted forever, you know. This thing is designed to last 10 years, and it's true. They've lasted, you know, like they last years and years. You buy it and it, you know, and you continue to use, at least, you know, I have continued to use it. So it's always been a really good investment. It's not the cheapest, but it has been, you know, something that I've enjoyed almost every single day. And the more pieces I add to the system, the better it gets.
What I love about speakers like the Sonos Soundbase 2 is the smart aspect of them. My Echo has really become a lot more used than I thought it would be. Like when I first got it, I was kind of like, yeah, I don't really know if I'm actually ever going to use this. But the integration with Spotify, it's so easy to use. I ended up listening to music a lot now. And sometimes I just have music going all day. I just leave the music going all day, like in the house, even if I'm not in the same room as the speaker, just because I like to have it going in the background. And same goes with like the Sonos speakers. They're so easy to use because you can control them from your phone, that you actually end up using them way more than you would if you had, like, I don't know, like a dumb speaker or like a record player or something like that. I just don't have the patience for that kind of stuff. I like the digital stuff because it's easy to control, and I find that you end up using it a lot more. Since you've had the Playbase, do you find that you're not using the Echo as much?
Yeah, and for sure, because you know I want to hear the sound through the better speakers.
Because it sounds way better.
And I've been trying to hook up the Alexa to the Sonos system, and there's ways to do it. You know, there's a few hacks, but it's you know I never actually really did get it to work to work properly. But the weird thing is that Sonos, you know, like last year was saying that Alexa was definitely the future for its own system, for the Sonos system. It was going to be Alexa compatible, and the implication was that they're going to be adding microphones to future products. And in the press release for this one, it says it's Alexa ready or compatible or something, but it doesn't contain any microphones to listen to your voice. So it begs the question, like, you know, well, how exactly, you know, and it kind of, I guess the implication is that you're going to have to hook up an Echo Dot or an Echo itself, you know, to the system itself, but it doesn't have any inputs. It's only got one. It's only got one optical audio input for the TV. Uh-huh. So it's a bit of a conundrum. It's weird because the press release says explicitly that this thing is going to be ready for later this year. It'll be Alexa compatible. You know, like almost like implying that they were going to do a software update, and you'll be able to like shout.
Maybe
it
will be able to control. Maybe the Echo would be able to control the sound base like it can its own internal speaker. So you could like send audio to it or something like that.
Well, maybe you could use your phone or something. I mean, maybe, that's what I was guessing.
I don't know.
Maybe they have hidden. I didn't tear it down, you know, but maybe there's a tear down.
You know what you should do is you should email the guy who sent you the speaker.
Yeah.
<He'd> be like, hey, got a question for you, pal.
Right. What does this mean? Yeah. I've completely
disassembled the Playbase looking for the microphone, but I haven't been able to find it. Does it include one?
I'll ask him. Good point.
I'm ready to put all the parts back in the box and send you the disassembled Playbase speaker. It was great. Thanks for the review. Okay, well, I got a little trinket that I'm reviewing, and I said before we started recording that I thought it was pretty cool, but you guys would probably think it was pretty lame, so to speak. I'm reviewing, well, I'm not reviewing, I straight out bought a Apple Watch stand. It's the first one that I've ever purchased, and it's going to sound like hyperbole, but I really mean it. It's just about the perfect Apple Watch stand.
Oh my God.
It's made by Elago, and it's shaped like a Mac Classic. In fact, if you want to see this thing, head over to my Instagram account, Instagram.com/Erfon, E-R-F-O-N. It's my most recent picture. It's shaped like a Mac Classic, and when you slide your Apple Watch into the top of it, it looks like a functioning Mac Classic computer. It's pretty cool if you like vintage Mac stuff, vintage Apple stuff. Very smart, very clever design. The case or the stand is high quality. It's made out of silicone. It's pretty heavy. It's sturdy. It's easy to take your watch in and out of it, in and it, of course, integrates with the Apple Watch charger, so your watch will charge while it's in the stand. And it's only like $12. Super cheap. You know, you don't need to have some expensive Apple Watch stand. It's small, so it fits on your bedside table. And it keeps the phone in the right orientation so that nightstand mode works on your Apple Watch. So the time, you know, will display. Buster, why are you taking a big dump on my pick here?
I just find it like just like a total like unnecessary, like an extra thing that you just totally don't need, you know, like it's just another thing. Like, yeah. Do you really need a dock for your watch? You know, like I just feel like at that point you're getting a little bit. I don't know. It's not for me. That's all I'll say.
You're getting too deep is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Buying crap that you don't need. But did you see the picture, dude?
What was it called?
It's the Elago Apple Vintage Apple Watch stand watch or something like thing. That. I'll have a link to it in the show notes for people that are interested in
it. You must have seen it, but so this has been everywhere. You know, we've done posts on it. In fact, we're trying to get it so we can sell it in the store.
Yeah. Probably is lame,
Leonard,
though.
Do you think it's pretty cool? Must think it's cool.
Yeah, it's cool.
Dude, it's super cool. It's super cool, yeah. I mean, I was totally with you until I got this. I was totally with you. I was like, dude, you don't really need an Apple Watch stand. Just set it on its side.
The one that looks like a vintage Mac, that one?
Yeah. Oh, pretty God, baller, right?
Even worse.
Pretty Jeez. Baller. Yeah, well, I like it. So screw you, pal.
Yeah, that's all that matters.
And it's cheap. yeah, that's right. It's clever. It's clever. It's a clever little tchotchke. Anyway, okay. I think we should go ahead and wrap it up there. That's all the Coldcast we have for you guys this week. But if you want to come take a big dump all over my pick this week like Buster did, you could do that. I'm on Twitter, as is everyone else. I'm at Airfon, E-R-F-O-N. Buster's BST3R Leander is L. Caney. This has been the Coldcast, the best 30-plus minute off conversation you're going to hear all week long. New episodes of the Coldcast come out every Thursday night. I want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll see you guys. You want to take this one, Eddie?
Oh, me?
Yeah, next time.
You go next time.
I thought I had Eddie as Buster, so.
Yeah.
Did he do like cliff jumping or anything, or was it just like just skiing down the slope?
I think skiing down the slope.
He did the jump, the ski jumping. Off right. the
he did the ski
ramps.
Jumping. That's yeah. perfect.
Yeah. And like,
did he die? Did he end up dying, or is he still alive?
I think he's still alive, and he came in dead last. He became a big. I mean, he was a huge celebrity in Britain because of this. He was hopeless. And in fact, I think Britain liked him better because he was so bad.
Yeah,
because
he's so
it
like,
makes me like him better too.
Yeah. I remember my parents that's like one of the first Olympic memories I can remember is like as a kid, Eddie the Eagle, and like my parents saying how like ridiculous he was.
He's like the British Rudy,
the guy exactly.
who never should have made the team, but everyone likes him because he's got big heart, even though he totally sucks.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what this guy was. He never jumped, I don't think, until he actually got there, and then you know, because he'd been skiing down his stairs. And
he had never landed a jump, I think, until the Olympic trials or the Olympics or something like that. But he looked so fly, like the mustache.
You're like you.
The glasses.
He looked amazing, flying through that air, mustache whistling in the wind. God rest his soul when he landed.
And he was a mail carrier too, I think. You know, like he just a regular guy, a regular job. Had this sort of weird dream that he wanted to be a ski jumper. God knows why. And you know, ended up going to the Olympics and representing the UK. So I think he's a spokesman now for like a motivational speaker. Yeah.
For those that didn't get that reference, you should Google him.
He's got these big glasses, isn't he?
Yeah. He's wearing like those Coke bottles. Yeah. Good looking guy. I bet he does well with the ladies.